Welcome to the new RNIB NA podcast, a new monthly podcast from RNIB in Northern Ireland for people affected by sight loss. Listen up, speak up, break down barriers. And you're very welcome to another episode of the RNIB NI podcast. Listen up, speak up, and break down barriers. That's what we're here to do, folks. You're very welcome along. As always, episode 7. I can't believe we've been at this now for 7 episodes. And thank you so much indeed for listening and letting us know that you're listening as well. As always, you can get in touch with the team here, the podcast team, by emailing rnibni@rnib.org.uk, or you can contact us through our social media channels. Just look for RNIB Northern Ireland on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, all sorts of places. But yeah, you're very welcome along to another jam-packed episode. I suppose this one we're talking about Charles Bonnet Syndrome, and particularly about the newly formed CBS Action Group, Charles Bonnet Syndrome Action Group, who are a group of people who live with the condition and who basically want to raise awareness of the condition and what it is, what it isn't, more to the point, and to campaign for just more support and more awareness amongst, you know, people in health and social care, amongst the general public. And also amongst the sight loss community too, about what CBS is. We will have Paula Beatty from our policy and campaigns team along very shortly, who's going to tell us a little bit more about the event in March and basically how next steps and how to get involved with future events, etc. We also then hear from Elaine Manson, also from RNIB here in Northern Ireland, who wants to talk about sight loss awareness sessions. Are you a group or a business or a local organisation who want to know about how they could better support people who are blind or partially sighted? Whether it's down to sighted guiding, whether it's making your business or venue more accessible or inclusive of people who can't see very well. Elaine's here to tell us all about that and how best you can get involved. Okay, with me now, I've got Paula Beatty, our Policy and Campaigns Manager here in RNIB in Northern Ireland. Paula, you're very welcome back on the podcast.
Thank you, Joe.
Great stuff. But this time we're talking about, last month we had a fantastic event up at Stormont to look at Charles Bonnet Syndrome.
Indeed, yes. We had an event there early in March to look at, really it was a reception up at the Long Gallery at Stormont that was sponsored by Andrew Muir, MLA. And really, RNIB there, we were supporting the CBS, the Charles Bonnet Syndrome Action Group, which currently has 4 members, and they're being supported by our policy and campaigns team to develop here in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, I was there myself, and it was really good to have so many people in the room focused on CBS. But I suppose, go back to the start a minute, why did these 4 people, or hopefully more soon, why did they come together, and what is it they're hoping to sort of, you know, raise awareness of?
Well, basically, these 4 people came together. I suppose a lot of them have been working with RNIB in different ways on different projects. And through, you know, developing that working relationship, they realised that all 4 of them, and indeed others, have Charles Bonnet Syndrome. Some of those would have been quite open about it for years. Others have only really been telling us and, you know, speaking generally to the broader public about this recently. So they decided, as that is the common denominator, to come together and look at, look, why do people not talk about Charles Bonnet Syndrome? Why does our health sector maybe not recognise it? A few of those people themselves have been misdiagnosed by GPs who maybe said, look, this is early onset dementia, which is scary stuff here, or this is like mental health issues. And they were wandering around for some of them for a couple of years thinking there was some other medical condition, when actually it was Charles Bonnet Syndrome. And in engagement with a support group that they were all involved with, they found out that other people with Charles Bonnet Syndrome were actually in the same situation, Joe. You know, they themselves had found they'd been misdiagnosed or hadn't been diagnosed by their clinicians at the time. So they had that common denominator, and they approached RNIB and said, look, can we get something on the agenda? Can we get a group up and working? Will RNIB support us in that, in terms of raising the profile and engaging with health professionals and the Assembly? So basically, we all came together, and all of that was thrown into one big pot, if you like, for the event, which involved the CBS group, involved others with CBS, it involved MLAs, it involved a lot of health professionals, ophthalmologists, and other, very importantly, other community and voluntary organisations who work in similar areas as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to stress here that this was all about bringing the community all together under in the one room. Yeah.
It was. It was about targeting those health professionals, ophthalmologists, the political decision makers, if you like, those from the likes of the BMA and the NIGP sector, and also our community and voluntary organisations who work with like the likes of diabetes and stroke and others who would also be maybe not as aware of CBS as well. So it was great to have everybody in the one room at the one time and having those conversations. Both the likes of Judith Potts from Esme Umbrella came across, and we had other clinicians speaking as well. And very importantly, we had input from one of the group members on her lived experience of Charles-Bonnie syndrome when she was diagnosed and the kind of images, hallucinations that she would have. But also very importantly, Joe, you know, as you were there, we also had developed a relationship with the Prison Arts Foundation and a group of ex-prisoners came together, and working with the group, they developed some art which was available on display on the day, which represented the different hallucinations that some of the group members would have.
Yeah.
And that in itself was extremely powerful. And we got a lot of feedback from people on that. And we're also going to be looking with the group as to how we can use that art again in terms of the awareness raising of the condition itself.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a talking point in the room that day, that the artwork, it really was.
Yes, it was. And very, very vivid. And again, we had, you know, some people had, you know, positive, very positive and nice images. Other people were able to describe sometimes some of the images they could see, which were slightly more frightening. So there's a very broad array.
Yeah.
And that was getting it across. And there was also the Braille available on the day as well. And down the line, we're hoping to have audio description of the art pieces as well through working with the Prison Arts Foundation. So again, I think it gave another perspective that people were actually, who didn't have the condition, were able to actually walk around and look at the different art pieces and see exactly what those in the CBS Action Group and others actually see when they have these hallucinations.
I think I was taken aback by when you start these conversations, and I think sometimes people walk into the room thinking they understand it, and I was struck with how much I didn't know about Charles-Bonnie syndrome. And the way we're going to hear from Elaine, Alec and Pat now up soon.
Yeah.
But they speak so, I suppose, passionately. They really want people to be more aware of it, so that anyone who's at home and maybe listening to this, who's maybe experiencing hallucinations or seeing things that aren't there because of their sight loss, speak about it. Talk to your friends, your family, your GP, whoever. You know, even come and talk to us here in RNAB.
Exactly, because I mean, we're aware that other people who saw the publicity around the event on the media had actually come forward since the event and said, oh God, that's what I have, or that's what I think I may have, and they're going to look into this. But so again, the very publicity around the event actually made other people have a look and maybe be more prepared, Joe, to speak openly about the fact that they have the condition, because a lot of people, you know, unfortunately are keeping that quite quiet and they aren't discussing that. So it was a good start. We regard the event as a start to the whole process of raising the profile and understanding of CBS here, particularly in Northern Ireland.
Well, Paula, thank you so much. If anyone wants to find out more about the CBS Action Group, or indeed your team's work in general, I suppose just contact you guys on the campaigns and mailbox.
Yes, please do. Yes, yes. We're sitting there ready and waiting, of course.
Super. Well, Paula, thank you very much. We'll have on again soon, I hope.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Bye-bye. My thanks to Paula there. And of course, if you do want to get in touch with the guys in the policy campaigns team in RNAB Northern Ireland, just email campaignsni@rnib.org.uk. Now, as I said, I was at the CBS Action event in Stormont in March. So now we're going to hear from Alec, Elaine and Pat, who are members of the group who were there on the day. With me now, I've got Alex Patterson, I've got Pat Britton, and I've got Elaine Orwin.
Yes.
Is that right? How are you doing, guys? You all right?
Doing well, thanks.
All well, thank you.
We just finished our reception event for Charles-Bonnie syndrome up at the Long Gallery in Stormont today. How do you think it went?
I was amazed at the attendance. And what was lovely is that we had a really good mixture of healthcare workers, some of the ministers. More could have come, I think, but absolutely a great way to launch our group.
Super. Pat, what's your sort of, what are you taking away from it today?
Well, I
I thought it was wonderful to have Esme's Umbrella join us today. We had Judith, who founded the organisation 10 years ago.
Yes.
So she's come over especially just to share with us, you know, how the organisation was founded and the research that she's been involved in and funded, and just to give us a lot of support to start off our CBS Action Group.
Alex, so what's your reflections on today?
Well, I've been waiting for years to actually get meeting Judith and to see her in real life. And it didn't disappoint. That was fantastic. I have to say, besides the turnout, I would have to say what the Prison Arts Foundation has done, not that I can see it well, but what my daughter has said is fantastic. And not only is there art, but I'm quite taken. There is a poem at the back of the room. And I am so taken. I've just spoken to Christine, mm-hmm. and I am so taken by the poem. And I'm just happy with the turnout. That for now, not that the three of us were ever quiet and shy and holding back in what we have, but it's out there now.
Yeah.
And I can't speak for the two women, but I don't hold back, and I'm not afraid to speak out.
I don't think any of you really hold back.
It's wonderful. It's actually wonderful that something now in Northern Ireland can come through, because there is quite a silent part of the population suffering child's bullying in silence, without anyone knowing, and we want to break that silence.
And tell me a little bit about that then, for those listening who maybe don't live with CBS, or maybe don't really understand.
It's basically hallucinations coming from the brain, trying to establish links with the eyes, which are not working, basically. So they're sending images. It can be of anything, but that person can establish it as dementia. So they are thinking, I'm seeing these things, I have dementia. So they won't speak to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
They'll live with sight loss plus these hallucinations. And for that point of view, it actually is frightening. And the one way that they can get relief is talking about it.
One thing that sort of struck me was that I think people who are maybe going through sight loss right now, to have then hallucinations and images, I think they're afraid of being sort of classed as either mentally ill, or people maybe losing trust in, yeah, maybe they're caring for someone, or maybe they've got responsibility.
They're even losing trust in themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
Because
yes,
they in themselves are thinking,
yes,
something is wrong with me mentally.
If anything is remembered about this whole day, is one, you're not in your own, and two, it's not a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And three, you can always talk to somebody. There are organisations out there. There's Esme's Umbrella, there's Deaf Blind, there's RNIB, there's MACLA. There are people there to talk, there's us. I know that in the past some of us have actually contacted people. I know I've sat in living rooms because somebody's asked, could you come up and speak to us? You're not on your own.
As a child, I vividly remember what went through my mind. It was a case of, I can't tell anyone about this.
Sort of fear of being...
I don't know what it is.
Fear of being misjudged or something?
Fear of being misjudged. I didn't know what it was as a child. And again, to say to my parents, not only am I experiencing sight loss, I'm also experiencing these hallucinations.
Yeah.
I didn't know what they were, didn't know how... except just get on with life. My way of dealing with things there is just almost ignore what was there and get on with things.
Pretend it isn't happening.
Pretend it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
As a child, that's how I dealt with it. Yeah.
And Alex, I remember talking to you earlier, and you mentioned to me about seeing things. Like one particular experience you told me about was a car pulling out in front of you and your wife.
That was the very, very first time.
Yes.
That's my first experience. We were in Portrush. Car pulled out in front of us and I grabbed the steering wheel.
That's quite shocking, isn't it?
It is quite shocking, with the whole family in the car. So for years afterwards, I actually sat in my hands when we were out. Now it just doesn't bother me. But for the very first time it happened, yeah, I actually could have killed my family, worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario, yeah, but really quite dramatic, that, isn't it? To feel like it was obviously very vivid, very real.
Was.
And Pat, what about yourself? Do you remember a beginning or a...
Oh, I remember it very clearly. I had been away with my daughter for a weekend, and I had encountered some severe migraine, which I don't suffer from ever. And when that all passed, I was then left with the colourful designs and shapes and And then that progressed into a visual image of a face. And I've had that face in front of me permanently for the last 12 years. It has never changed.
Wow.
It changes shape, it changes, it moves from side to side, or it can look at me. It has a huge aura around it, which sparkles and shines. But I've been left with that now permanently for 12 years, whether your eyes are open or whether your eyes are closed. And that has been my experience of transforming.
Yeah. That must wear you down after a while.
Well, as I was explaining earlier, I'm quite active. So I'm always on the go and doing things. I think I'd be much more, if I was much older and sitting down in a chair and it's all you're seeing, I think that would have a totally different impact on you. But the fact that I'm able to get up and move around and go places.
Active life. Yeah.
It's there. I'm always aware that it's there. But it doesn't bother me in the way that suppose it would have been a much older person.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much indeed for chatting to you. Elaine, Pat and Alex, thanks very much indeed. Joining us today on the RNIB NI podcast, we have a real treat. We've got Judith Potts, the founder of Esme's Umbrella, who is on the line today. How are you doing, Judith? You're very welcome.
I'm very well, thank you. And it's lovely to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Super. I was at the CBS Action event that we held in Stormont in March, and I just thought, we've got to get Judith back on the podcast. But I suppose just to begin, tell us a little bit about the history of Esme's Umbrella and why you decided to form the organisation.
Well, the Esme of Esme's Umbrella was my mum. And it was because of her experience of Charles-Bonnet syndrome at a time when nobody was talking about it that finally persuaded me I absolutely had to do something. So Esme was in her early 90s. She was very independent. She lived alone, looked after herself, cooked for herself, completed correctly the Telegraph cryptic crossword every day, which is certainly more than I could do. Mm-hmm. And she seemed fine. I knew she had the eye disease glaucoma, but in those days, I knew nothing at all about eye conditions, diseases. And I don't think I quite realized how much sight she'd lost. She was so good at compensating. And all seemed to be fine until one day I was just leaving her flat and she suddenly said, "I do wish these people would get off my sofa." Well, of course, there was no one sitting on her sofa. And while I took a deep breath, wondering how on earth I was going to answer this, she said, "And there is a child dressed in Edwardian costume who follows me everywhere, and a hideous gargoyle-like creature that jumps from table to chair." And then she went on to describe how she'd looked out of her window and she'd found herself in the middle of an Edwardian funeral procession. Now, there's no doubt that she'd had this for quite some time and had only just found the courage, if you like, to tell me, because the word dementia was firmly hanging in the air between her and me. But then I remembered the cryptic crossword and I thought, well, she can't possibly have dementia. What on earth is this? So I said, "Look, are you all right if I leave you? Because I'm not sure now." And she said, no, it's fine. Leave me. I call them my visions," she said. "I don't like them. I wish they'd go away, but I can manage." So somewhat reluctantly, I went home and started to do some research. And with the most enormous piece of luck, I found, buried in the health pages of one of our newspapers, a tiny paragraph about a young man called Matt Harrison, who I actually spoke to only yesterday, who had Stargardt's disease. And he had developed this condition called Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And he was seeing Tibetan monks, skulls, strange flocked wallpaper, and I think the wallpaper that he had seen in his room at university before Stargardt's hit. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's another sight loss condition. It must be something to do with that. So I called Esme. I said, "Don't worry, I'm going to speak to your ophthalmologist tomorrow and all will be fine." And that is where it all went wrong, because her ophthalmologist refused to discuss Charles-Bonnet syndrome to the extent that he sent his junior to her next eye appointment with strict instructions not to discuss it. I then thought, well, the GP must know about this. So I tried the GP, who said, no, she's got dementia. I said, no, she really hasn't. And we left it there. Then I tried her optometrist, who'd never heard of it. So at that point in my life, I was actually writing a health column for The Telegraph, which was actually all about cancer, because I had had breast cancer. They'd asked me to write about it. And it was really about the work of the charities. But I thought, nobody seems to know about this condition. So I did a bit more research and I found Professor Dominic Fitch, who is at King's College London, and he is the world authority on Charles-Bonnet syndrome and visual conditions, which, or any condition actually, which causes hallucinations, visual hallucinations. So I thought, and he was the first person to do any research as well. So I thought, right, okay, I'm going to go and see him. So I went to see him, told him about Esme. He said, yep, that's what she's got. And then he explained what it was. So when you have sight, there are messages which run all the time from the eye to the brain, the retina in the eye to the visual cortex in the brain, the eye acting like a camera, the brain interpreting what you're seeing. As sight diminishes, those messages slow down or stop entirely. But for some reason that we just don't understand as yet, the brain doesn't slow down or calm down. It does absolutely the opposite. It fires up and, if you like, fills in the gaps, creates images of its own. The other thing he said to me was, these images are always totally silent, no other sense is involved, and this is not a mental health condition. So I went back to my desk and I wrote the world's first column about Charles-Bonnet syndrome, and I was inundated with emails from all over the world, from people who were relieved to discover it wasn't a mental health condition, who wanted more information, which I didn't have at the time, or who wanted to tell me their stories. And it was one of these stories that, after Esme had died, and CBS stayed with her to the end, so it was horrible. She was always surrounded by visual hallucinations. But it was one of these stories which came from a university professor in America. And she told me the story of her mum, who had been placed in a dementia unit, even though the family said she was totally sane, or as Charles Bonnet wrote of his grandfather in 1760, of sound mind. But the doctors, no, they'd obviously never heard of CBS, put her in the dementia unit because she was hallucinating worms and slugs in her food and in her drink. No one could reassure her. She stopped eating and drinking and she died. And that did it for me. So I said to Professor Fitch, I think we should do something. Let's start a campaign, an awareness campaign. So in 2015, at the House of Commons in London, that is exactly what we did. And I turned it into a charity in 2021. Sorry, that was a very long story, but that's how we got there.
Well, listen, you're a great storyteller, Judith. I said that. I love listening to you.
Thank you.
So it was personal for you, isn't it?
Totally, yes.
And we've just listened to, on the podcast there, we had Alex, Elaine and Pat at the Stormont event, who were telling of their how CBS started for them. And I note that the message that always comes through when people talk about this is, they're afraid to admit to maybe friends or family or those around them what's going on.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Because if you've never heard of it, you assume that you have developed some kind of mental health condition. And that still has a huge stigma attached to it. So people don't want to say anything.
Especially if you've also had some sort of caring responsibility or maybe a job or something that you need to protect.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. Absolutely. You certainly don't want to talk about it. And it's interesting because there is a lovely guy called Miles Northwood, and he he lost his sight. I think he had cancer in both eyes when he was 4 years old. He went on to captain the England blind cricket team, to hold down jobs. He developed CBS very soon after the second eye had gone, age four. He told no one. He, I think, told a seven-year-old friend when he was seven, and they fought the monsters that he saw together. But basically, no one. Didn't tell his parents. When he was 48, he read something I had written, and he contacted me, and he said, have I been living with a mental health condition since I was four, or do you think this is Charles-Bonnet syndrome? And I said, well, you're clearly totally sane, so yes, this is Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And I said, I hope the family are being supportive. And he said, I've never told anyone, not even my wife when I got married. And I was so appalled at that. Now we have proved that children develop CBS in the same way as do adults, even though all the doctors kept saying to me, no, children won't develop it. And I used to say, well, sorry, why not? I mean, they lose their sight in the same way. Why wouldn't they develop it? No, couldn't answer me, but no. Finally, Professor Maria Musaji at Moorfields in London and Dr. Lee Jones, Lee is a psychologist, they proved conclusively by looking at the notes of children at Moorfields and Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital, and they discovered 13 children who had mentioned seeing things that weren't there, which had been put into their notes, but nobody had helped them. Nobody had talked to them about it. So we have now proved that children and young people develop this in exactly the same way as do adults. And my worry now is how many children are living like Miles did, too afraid to say anything, or because their parents are probably upset because they've been diagnosed with a sight loss condition, they don't want to upset their parents even more by saying, I'm seeing things that aren't there as well, just to add to your worries.
It's all about further research, isn't it? And gathering more concrete.
All about, yeah.
Yeah.
All about and research.
So what is your sort of, I suppose, medium to long-term aims with the charity, Esme's Umbrella, etc., and your hopes for people who live with Charles-Bonnet syndrome?
Well, my hope is that, I mean, everybody says to me, a cure. And yes, a cure would be lovely. That's going to take a very long time. I think we do know that there was a tiny piece of research done at the University of Newcastle about 7 years ago, I think now. And they used a device. I think the research is called transcranial brain stimulation. So they put a device onto the visual cortex, which kind of beamed something or another. I'm not quite sure. You can tell I'm not a doctor. Into the brain. And that was brilliant at quelling the hallucinations. I think they did it a couple of times a week, and it worked really, really well. But the cohort for the research was, I think, 16 people. So the NHS were not interested. They wouldn't take it up.
It was too small of a group. But
just recently, I read a piece about a device which is being used in exactly the same way to help people who live with depression. So I contacted the two professors, my professor and Professor John Paul Taylor, and said, is this the same device? And they said, identical. It's just that for depression, it goes on the forehead, and for CBS, it would go over the visual cortex at the back of the head. Well, this is so simple when I talk about it, but getting someone to research it with a large number of people is not going to be so easy. However, my visit to Belfast has thrown up a couple of possibilities. So that is great. And Professor Jackson, I know, works with some people in Wales. So I'm putting them together and suggesting somehow that they find the money. That's always comes back to the money.
Indeed,
always
it comes does. Back to the yes.
money. Everything in life comes back to money, actually. So it would be lovely if that worked. That would be absolutely terrific. And of course, I came to Belfast because I tried this in London at the House of Commons and got a little way, but not very far. And I'm hoping that if you can do this, it would really make all the other countries follow suit. And that is to have a diagnostic pathway for Charles-Bonnet syndrome embedded in the NHS so that every person who starts to lose their sight is asked the question, do you have hallucinations? Are you seeing things that aren't there? And then the information is given to them and the pathway leads to some form of treatment, even if it's counselling, just something, so that it helps every single person. Even if they don't develop it, at least they know what it is should it happen. Because people tell me that if they get that warning, that means that that first hallucination they know isn't real. So horrible though it might be, they at least know what it is. The problem when you are not told is that you immediately think you're developing a mental health condition.
Yeah, and that starts anxiety and panic and worry, yeah.
Panic and worry. Yeah. And we know also that panic, worry, isolation, stress, anxiety, fever, all these things make it worse. So it becomes a vicious circle.
Yes, I get that. Because I've been talking to the guys, the recurring thing they kept saying, apart from they were too afraid to talk about it with their close, nearest and dearest, was also that they just want, they want the world to, certainly the health and social care sector to understand that it's real, and you know, yeah. it's a real thing for them each and every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it can either happen, it's always random. You never know when it's going to happen. For some people, it's occasional. For some people, it's daily. For some people, it's every waking hour.
So tell me a little bit about, if people want to get in touch with you or and the organisation, how best can they do that?
The best thing to do is to email me via my website. And the website is www.charlesbonnet.com. Now, we say Charles Bonnet because Charles Bonnet was a Swiss naturalist, lawyer. He was a very clever man. So we don't call it Charles Bonnet. In his honour, we call it Charles Bonnet. So, so it's www.charlesbonnetsyndrome.uk. There's no co in there. It's just .uk.
.uk. Gotcha. And finally, all our guests on the podcast, we ask them the same question. If you had a magic wand today, what one thing would you do to make life better, to break down barriers for people living with sight loss?
If I had a magic wand, I would wave it across the entire world so that the mindsets of people who make wrong assumptions about the abilities of people who are blind and partially sighted would be transformed. That would be my magic wand.
And
because I do think that education is where we're what we need. We need people to, well, first of all, with CBS, we need people across the world to understand what it is so everyone gets the right support. Obviously, if I had a serious magic wand, I would wave it. And if there was no sight loss, there would be no CBS.
Ah, no, that's the big one.
That's the big one. Yeah, but these are magic wands. And unfortunately, however, I do think the more we can do to talk to people and change their mindsets, the better.
I wholeheartedly agree. It's about imagine if school kids and young people heard about things like this earlier on, so that when they become the adults who are in charge of things, they've got a better knowledge base to work from.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you get no argument from me on that one.
Good. I'm glad. just a big thank you for this, and a big thank you for inviting me over to Belfast. I had a wonderful day. I absolutely loved meeting everybody, and your enthusiasm to help and to nag your government is utterly brilliant. And I'm hoping that we can really make something come of this, and that we get that pathway, which then Wales, England and Scotland will have to follow. And of course, as I said at in Belfast, at the at Stormont, Esme was born in Belfast. So it kind of should be Northern Ireland that does all this for us.
Oh, super. That's brilliant. I didn't realise that bit. She was born in Belfast.
She was.
Well, that's fantastic. Judith Potts, thank you so much indeed for your time this morning for talking to us.
Not at all. It was a great, great pleasure.
Okay, across the table from me today, I've got Elaine Manson, our Community Social Action Manager here in RNAB Northern Ireland. Now, Elaine has come in today. I've grabbed her on the way by. Elaine wants to come in and talk to us a little bit about our Understanding Sight Loss sessions that her and the team are rolling out across Northern Ireland.
Indeed, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean?
So my team is basically, so it's a community social action team, and we're basically tasked with raising awareness amongst the general public and organisations and businesses, etc., and raising awareness of sight loss and the barriers that people with sight loss face in their everyday lives. And because of the work we do in RNIB, we know that one of the biggest barriers is public perceptions of sight loss. So really what my team wants to do is roll out, and we have been doing, rolling out a series of what we call Understanding Sight Loss sessions. We deliver to all the sectors, and we are making their staff and other professionals more aware of how they can adapt their services to give better access to blind and partially sighted people.
Yeah, so it's kind of like equipping them, I suppose.
It is, and a lot of times it is just very small changes that employers or small local businesses would need to make in order to make life easier for blind and partially sighted people to access their services.
It's a great idea. And is there sort of people with sight loss involved with that then?
There, absolutely. So we do our sessions. We have a PowerPoint, but we also have one of our volunteers, which we call lived experience volunteers. So that is a person who's lived with sight loss, could be blind, could be partially sighted, maybe a guide dog user. But those people have worked with us in terms of developing the presentation, and they also then are there to give that lived experience perspective, which is really impactful. And we know that from the feedback we get from the audiences, that that's people's most favourite part, actually.
Good. That's actually nice to hear, to be fair, because I think sometimes people might have it in their head that perhaps RNAB tell people what to do and in these sort of scenarios, and it's not. It's more blind and partially sighted people, you know, sharing their experience and bringing people along with them, isn't it?
That's what it is, yeah. And as I say, these people just talk about their own everyday experiences, and it really gives the audience an insight into how difficult life can be if there's barriers, you know, in your way. And those barriers are not all, you know, people don't realise. And it could be as simple as, you know, if you're a cafe owner, keeping chairs pushed in under the table, you know, making sure there's a clear pathway. It's not always, you know, major adjustments that need to be made.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes people, when they don't know what to do, they get a bit lost with it all. But you show them the way, and all of a sudden they're up and they've got it. Like as you say, the cafe owner or the shop,
yes,
or even the taxi firm or something. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So if if it, there's somebody out there who, well, I suppose there's two things here. There's one, if somebody who's blind or partially sighted who wants to get involved, and also then there's, you know, as you say, a small business owner or a group or a, you know, a service out there that wants, would like us to come along and talk to their team. How would people do that?
So you may come across, I have a team on the ground in Northern Ireland, so you may come across one of our community social action coordinators at different events, so you can do it through them. We have some publicity materials that we leave in key locations. Also, I suppose one of the easiest ways is to contact the RNIB helpline. Mm. Now, that is a national helpline, but they will put you, they will pass on the request to Northern Ireland so that we can respond to that. Or we have a dedicated community social action email address as well that you can use.
What's the email address? Do you know off the top of your head?
It is. It's community social action ni@rnib.org.uk, and the helpline is 0303 123 9999.
Super. Just before you go, Lynn, just walk us quickly through what would one of the sessions kind of entail.
Okay. So it looks at some statistics just to make people aware of the incidence of sight loss in Northern Ireland. It'll then look at different the spectrum of sight loss. So you can have some vision through to no vision, which is actually quite rare. We will do an exercise where we have glasses that simulate different eye conditions, and we will ask the audience if they'd be willing to wear those glasses and be guided by one of our staff, just to give them a picture of what it's like with the different eye conditions. And it could even be somebody in your family has glaucoma and you don't know how they see, and this gives you the opportunity to get a real insight into it. And also, at the end of the sessions, what we'll do is we have an ask now. So what we will ask the audience to do is, you know, approach, if you see a blind partially sighted person and they look as if they need assistance, approach that person. And we will talk them through how to approach that person. If you have, for example, overhanging hedges in your garden, you know, cut those back, because it makes can make a big difference. If your neighbour is parking on the pavement, go and gently say, look, that's not really appropriate. So we do have an ask.
Bring your wheelie bins in.
Bring your wheelie bins in. Don't leave them lying all over the street. And that's the thing as well. We're going to do some work with the local councils, and we're going to be talking to their cleansing operatives and talking them through how, you know, irresponsibly placed bins can be such a hazard for people with sight loss. So there's lots of elements to it. And as I say, we have an evaluation included, and the feedback is really, really positive.
Well, if you're interested, guys, and you want to get in touch with Elaine and the team, you can contact us. Well, if you want to just contact using the helpline, 0303 123 9999. Or via email. What's the email address again, Lynn?
It's Community Social Action.
It's a bit of a long one.
Community Social Action, ni@rnib.org.uk.
Thank you so much, Lynn. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Yeah, thank you to Elaine and all our guests, as always, for another cracking episode in the RNIB and I podcast. Thank you to Paula Beattie here, our Policy and Campaigns Manager in RNIB Northern Ireland. Thank you also to our contributors, Alec, Pat Britton and Elaine Orwin at the Charles Bonnet Syndrome event in March. Also, thank you to Judith Potts from Esme's Umbrella for joining us on the podcast. Really fascinating conversation. I hope you agree. As always, please, please do get in touch with the podcast here and let us know what you think, any ideas for future content, anything at all. Just reach out to rnabni@rnab.org.uk on the email. You can find us on social media. Just search for RNAB Northern Ireland on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky even. Yeah, so episode 8 will be coming out at the end of April, we hope. I'm not going to give too much away, but we're going to have a nice feature on a recent campaigns win in the Bangor area. Much more about that in the next episode. But until then, guys, you can always find a lot of support and information on our website. Just visit www.rnib.org.uk. Don't forget about our RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you all again soon, I hope.
RNIB. See you differently.